Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. And with us today, with me today, we have Max Girardo. Hello.
Hello, hello. Hello, everyone. And hello.
So you have been on the podcast before. We did one, an initial one back in 2020. And we sort of covered a bit of your background and journey to date. And then we did another catch up in 2021. But for the people that have not come across you and sort of where we are, can you tell a little bit about sort of who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So obviously, Max Girardo. What do I do? Cars. Love cars. I just love cars. I'm lucky. I get to play with cars every day. I sell cars, buy cars, broker cars. So we're a classic car, if you want to call it that, or collectible car. We'll come on to the terminology.
Used car salesman.
Used car salesman. I have to say, that is something that I sometimes use when I'm at a dinner party, so I don't have to have the car chat with people that don't know that much about them. Used car salesman. The higher the mileage, the better. No, just kidding. Used car salesman. We're in Oxfordshire, just outside of Oxford, in a little village called Stadhampton, where we've bought a farm. I think the first time we did our little chat, we were in central London.
We were.
Or in Fulham. I say central London, I'm cheating. In Fulham, southwest London. So we've moved out to rural Oxfordshire, where we bought a farm. We've converted some barns to move the cows out. And now we've got sort of a car, classic car showroom, a couple of barns. We're currently sitting in my office having a chat about cars, I hope.
Yeah, that's actually, it's... So last time we were talking about this earlier and how placing time sometimes is a lot easier when you're placing the cars, because I came in a car and I was like, okay, it was about that time. But when I came last, which was when the last time we recorded a podcast, you had one sort of side of the showroom, the bit I'm pointing behind me, which was a bit like a garage-esque, I think, at that point in time.
Yeah, exactly. When we bought the property, that was a four-space garage with a gym behind it, and a pool table and a sort of a playroom and an office. And we've sort of opened it up completely. And now we've got some very fancy lighting. And at the moment, there'll be probably more at the moment, we've got four Ferraris in the showroom. We've connected two buildings, so that's going to be our reception area. So when you arrive, there'll be coffees over there and the first taste of cars.
It's quite It's a serious hit of cars when you walk in there, not in terms of volume, but in terms of like what is sitting there right now. Because when you say you sell cars and, you know, used old cars, I presume that actually when you meet people that you've never met before and you say I sell cars, they probably go through their mind all sorts of different things. Yeah. What have we currently got sitting in that room?
So we thought we'd do, so it's a sort of a small petite showroom, that one there. And so we're trying to do it themes. So at the moment we've got a Ferrari theme going on in the showroom, and we've got a Ferrari competition theme. So we've got four competition Ferraris in order of age, we'll do it. We've got a Ferrari 512M, so it's a sports prototype from the 1970s. Yeah. That's the car that would race against the 917s. You know, you see the pictures of Ferrari and Porsche battling at Le Mans, the Gulf liveried 917. Well, the nemesis to the 917 Porsche was the Ferrari 512M sports prototype. Then right across from it is a 1982 Ferrari BBLM. Again, another Ferrari prototype. That particular car has done 24 Hours of Daytona. Has done Le Mans 24 Hours twice in two different liveries.
Nice.
Right now, it's in what I think is a super cool livery. It's pop art. So it was delivered new to Pozzi, and they got a red racing Ferrari, 12 cylinders, you know, mid-engine, loosely based on the Boxer. And they had an artist come in, and he painted like pop art. So it's got like clouds and birds on it, and it's it's real sort of 70s pop art, which I think is really really cool. Then next in the lineup, we've got a 550 ProDrive. So that's a GT1 car, probably one of the most successful GT1 cars of all time. There are 10 cars built. There's a great story behind them. I'm very passionate about them.
Yeah,
we've done a book about them. Well, I don't own particularly this car, but we own another 550 GT1. So it's a sort of a pet project of mine. I'm a really big fan of that. And then across from it is much more modern times, a 458 GTE. So an X-Works 458 GTE entered by Ferrari, car number 51 at Le Mans, driven by Tony Villander and Kobayashi.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So when did a car like that, how's that come round to being sold? Who managed to get
so
hold
interesting.
Of it?
How
did that work?
So I say, so Ferrari ran or supported 10 cars, but actually they're all run by IF Ficorse. Mm-hmm. And the cars were owned by IF Ficorse with Ferrari sort of backing.
Okay.
So actually at the end of their career, one of the gentleman drivers, so those cars, they all have a pretty similar history. They do the works cars anyway. They do 1 year of works, so WEC, full season, supported by Ferrari. The following year, they generally go in the Pro-Am. So they do 1 year Pro-Am, Le Mans, and then after that, they generally get sold. And one of the AMs that drove the car in period bought the car because he wanted to keep it, because that's the car he did Le Mans.
Nice.
So that's quite cool. I mean, if you go and do Le Mans 24 hours, I think they're cool to like own then the car, right? And keep it.
Yeah.
When you have your friends over, you can be like, yeah, that's the car I raced at Le Mans.
And especially if that then like won or whatever prior to your ownership. I heard a story, I think, about it was someone who was running or had bought. The contract part of it is the interesting part. I think it was a 488 GTE.
Yeah.
And he was being asked to basically buy it before it had done any of the racing.
So that's definitely, that's now with modern racing. It's definitely a big thing. So even the 499Ps, the two 499Ps that we've seen bring them on, those cars are actually sort of sold or pre-sold, if you like.
Oh, really?
So somebody owns, can you imagine if you own that car and then you go to Le Mans, you watch it. God, is it going to finish? Is it going to finish? Is it going to win? And if it wins, like you don't know what the end result is, but those cars are owned by collectors and you sign a contract, you pay up but you only take delivery of your car after whatever the contract is, 4 years or you know, once they're out of date. So that's actually quite a common thing. And they're not cheap. I mean,
you're buying
a car that is worth millions, and Ferrari will tell you when you can take delivery, when you're allowed, if you're allowed to have it at home, are you allowed to drive it? But pretty cool thing, right? Voyage to go on.
That is pretty cool. And then this year, Ferrari said, oh yeah, we're going to do like a customer racing version.
I mean, it's phenomenal. So they're doing 25, 499, what are they called?
P modificators.
They're all sold. And I tell you, I was down at the Ferrari finals in Mugello, and I was just talking to some of our clients. The amount of people that want one that can't get one, you know.
Oh, really?
I was blown away. And, you know, modern cars, a new special limited edition comes out, and the manufacturers, oh, yeah, they're all sold. But maybe I'll get you one, or we're all the other.
6 months' time. Oh, we found you.
This one, Ferrari, there's not 25 cars. They are definitely, definitely, definitely all gone. I have searched. I've, like, called everyone I know to try and find one for a client. He's like, it's not possible, they're all sold. I spent a lot of time with this.
Yeah.
I can tell you, they are all sold. Gone. Like, the first day.
Well, I imagine if you are, let's say you're racing the sort of person that might be racing at Le Mans in GT Am or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're pretty into your cars. You're pretty into racing. You're pretty into Le Mans. You're currently racing in the top class that you are allowed to with a manufacturer, other than like LMP2, which is sort of going away. That, the option of buying that car, it's just mad.
It's just mad, isn't it? it's actually amazing. I mean, it's eye-wateringly expensive. Mind you, racing is just expensive, right?
There is.
I don't care what anyone says, there is no such thing as cheap racing. Literally, there is no such thing as cheap racing.
I remember, I think it was even, if I went back to like my first track day, you don't really add up the costs of the day until down the line you're like, oh, I need new discs. Like,
that's called the man maths.
Exactly. Like, I can afford the fuel. I don't know about tires. I don't know about all that sort of stuff. So coming back to the cars in there, on the way here, I was thinking about your Christmas video. This is going out, I don't know, it'll probably be after Christmas, because Christmas is pretty close now. And so some of those are in the video.
One of those
is in the video.
One of those, yeah. The 512M.
The 512M. And I was trying to remember the name of that car. And I was like, I feel like they're called 512s. But then I was like, but then there's the BBLM, which is also a 512.
Yeah.
So how does the naming around that time period work?
So there it's down to 5 liters and 12 cylinders. So 512 is a 5 liter 12 cylinder car. The naming in Ferrari is always there's always some connection to the I say always. F12, maybe Ferrari and 12. I don't know about F12. Is that Ferrari and 12 cylinders? I don't know. I feel like there often was some mechanical connection to the number. What is 812 then?
800 horsepower?
812 horsepower?
It's not that many horsepower. I have no idea. It's 12 cylinders.
It's 12. And they made more than 8.
And they made more than 8. And they haven't done the Porsche thing where they just call everything turbo.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. I am actually amazed in the world of modern cars, the amount of special editions, limited editions that come out. We deal in classic cars, if you want to call them that. So, you saw by the 1970s, 80s, 60s, a few cars, pre-war cars from the 30s. So that's our daily sort of bread and butter. We don't really get involved in the brand new cars. So I sort of look at the modern car market a little bit from the outside. Doesn't mean we'll have a LaFerrari or a Enzo, but we're not like a supercar dealer where we're getting the allocation for the next one. So I look at it from the outside, and I have to say the amount of limited editions, special editions, new manufacturers that are coming out now, I feel like there's a real boom. I mean, it's quite something.
It's a real boom, but also...
Or am I just being really old and boring?
Or is it like a rebranding, as in, like, not by the company, but of what a normal production car is? I think it depends on the manufacturer and stuff like that, but I think if you look at something like a McLaren 720S, for example, there is a possibility that there's less 720S. It's all Ferrari, like a 488 versus Pistas and Pista Spiders. There might be less 488s than there are Pistas and Spiders.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
And they're just going, this is the special one, and everyone wants to buy the special one.
Mm-hmm. Good marketing.
It is good marketing.
Good marketing, yeah.
But it does make, like, being that person that goes, right, where if you're looking at the older stuff, the special ones, there's less of them.
Yeah.
And like significantly less,
for sure. Like the tens. Numbers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. The numbers of cars that sort of now you think. I mean, in our world, an F40. You know, that's it's a limited production car, but actually, there's quite a lot of them. Really, in the world of classic cars, by normalized sort of production numbers, that's over 1,000. Is it 1,400 F40s?
An unknown number between above 1,000.
Exactly right. That no one will ever know.
With those cars, they get gaining in popularity, like F40s or F50s. I mean, they're really popular at the moment. Do you think, because there's still a lot of them, but do you think we're definitely starting to be getting to the point where, even though there's a lot of them, there's a lot of people that want them?
Yeah, for sure. And those cars are, I don't want to say, it's a great brand. Right, everyone understands Ferrari. Everyone it's easy to understand. There's no, but it is a brand we can all relate to.
Yeah.
And so if you're getting into cars, right, it's a lot easier to think, oh, you know what, I'm going to buy a Ferrari. What are the special ones, or what are the you know, the F40, the F50? They're part of the supercar, the set. Mm. So it's cars that's like a really easy access point to get into. They're very liquid. You can buy them, you can sell them. There's always someone that there's probably more demand. I mean, depends on price, of course, but
yeah.
But generally, there is someone out there looking for an F50 that would like a really good car. So those cars appeal to a lot of people, and even the younger buyers, younger generation. I have seen there's a definite change. So the guys coming into the market now, the new buyers that are getting into cars, they're looking at F50s, F40s, maybe even 288 GTOs, but not so much the 1950s cars.
Yeah,
their 50s cars are sort of having a little bit of a cool off. Now, doesn't mean they're going down in value, but they're just not as popular anymore. It's just a slightly different type of buyer.
And that's like moving forward. It's an interesting one to try and not necessarily like work out, but like historically, there are cars that there's not very many made of. Doesn't necessarily make them valuable.
Correct.
Now we've got lots of limited edition cars, lots of combustion engine cars. Everything's going to go electric. Is everything going to be really valuable? Is nothing going to be valuable at all?
Yeah.
Are only cars that you can drive on tracks become valuable? Is that going to get banned?
It's a pretty interesting time of change. I mean, I actually get this question quite a lot, like what's going to happen to our, petrol. Everyone wants to know. Well, I give the example of sort of turn of the century. Everyone used to go around by horse, right? There was a time, I don't know, late 1800s, like if you were coming to record a podcast, you would have come on a horse. And then one day, your ancestor was recording a podcast saying, what's going to happen? There's this guy that's invented cars. There's going to be cars everywhere. What's going to happen to our horses? He's like, so what happened is the horses and the horse industry still exists. There's horses, I would say, everywhere. But you use horses to go on hacks, on races, on riding for recreational purposes. However, you now no longer take a horse to go to the pub. You take a car. So same thing with the combustion engine. Probably what will happen is the special cars we'll keep and we'll use for special events, rallies, tours, track days, racing, things that are a bit more special. But when you're going to have to go to the pub or to the supermarket, you will probably use an electric car. So same, I think, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think that's what's going to happen. And so the less interesting cars, Opel Corsa or Vauxhall Corsas or, like things that are really not that exciting, will probably sort of die away. But the special cars, the ones that are interesting, fast, collectible, will become hopefully even more desirable because there won't be any more. But there'll be a big differentiation. All the other stuff will just get squashed and disappear.
Yeah, because if you're looking at cars, let's say we were 10 years in the future, you're going to be able to get fuel for a long time.
Yes.
And you're not, I don't think they're ever going to ban us flat out from driving. You might not be able to drive in a city or something like that.
Correct, yeah.
If you're looking back from 30 years time at sort of special cars that are around now, what are the ones that the hardcore enthusiasts who are still trying to drive them care about?
Mm-hmm.
Because we could have that thing where you look at it and go, I mean, I really like that. I really liked a 997 GT3 RS or whatever, but I couldn't care less about something else.
Yeah.
That was around the time. And then all those cars, like how is that going to work out? Like in terms of these, some cars there'd just be a huge difference in values between.
Huge difference. And probably you're going to have somewhere to house them. Maybe the infrastructure might get you'll have a little bit more infrastructure to own a petrol engine car.
It'll become more like race cars.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll become exactly right. It'll become more like race cars, and the cars will be for fun, for special occasions, for special events. It's a bit like maybe a little bit like almost like owning a hypercar today. It's unlikely you'll take your hypercar to Waitrose to do the shopping.
Yeah.
You use it for, I don't know, whatever it is, for to go to Goodwood, or use it for a drive to Goodwood, or use it for a rally or an event or a cars and coffee. So that's going to be probably how it'll go forward. And God knows, Let me ask you, do you think there'll be any interesting electric cars?
Yeah, it will be.
I mean, I have to say, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but recently I was thinking, there's actually some, I don't own one, but there's actually some kind of funky electric cars. So maybe there'll be some collectible electric cars as well.
Oh yeah, totally. I think so. I think
I'm not completely against them. I know there's some people like, oh no, die. Electricity must die.
No, I'm not in that camp at all. I think tool for a job in terms of you pick the right thing for the right situation.
And also, I can understand you might not like them, but we don't have to sort of necessarily like crush them all.
No,
we ain't going to win this battle.
No one's coming for your petrol cars. Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. You sell a lot of competition cars and then also some road cars.
Yeah.
I don't know what the mix is. I guess it changes all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of selling competition cars, is it much harder? Does it take longer? Is it trickier to sell a competition car? Because I guess you're going to say it depends.
Yeah, I mean, it's a more specialized, right? So if you take a road car, whatever it is, an equivalent road car, an equivalent competition car, for sure the pool of people that are interested in the road car is bigger than the people that are interested in competition cars.
Yeah.
So for sure there is a smaller pool of people. Having said that, there is generally, if you can compare the road equivalent of a competition car, there's fewer competition cars.
Yeah.
You know? So there isn't as much choice. There's less of them on the market at the same time. So there is you do have a slightly more captive audience. But it is a lot more specialized. But when you sell a few of them, you sell a few competition cars, then people that like those kind of cars start to come to you, and you can make a bit of a niche, a bit more of a, I don't want to say we're specialized in them, but we have a bit of a niche in that market where if someone wants a competition car, they'll probably call us, and we're quite into it. So it's probably more difficult to get in at first, but
yeah.
Once you're in and you start to know the right people, then it's quite not easy to maintain, but but you get a bit of momentum. Whereas if you're just selling road cars, it's probably an easier access point if you're just starting from scratch.
Yeah,
you know, okay, I want to sell some cars. I wouldn't recommend getting into this world and start selling competition cars because it is quite difficult once. If you don't have the prior contacts and experience.
Yeah. And then you see, for example, the four cars in there, we're talking pretty high end, great sort of versions, good history and all that sort of stuff. Are you quite careful with what you consign, or does it then almost come down to just like, well, if they're happy to sell it for the right price, it will eventually
no,
sell?
No, yeah, we are super, super, super careful. And that room, you know, we decided to do a Ferrari competition room. And if you look at that room, we only have cars that we are happy with the history or happy we think are really good examples of what each model. And it's not just a matter of, as a matter of fact, probably slightly we're happy to push the envelope a little bit, you know, and if a car is a bit more expensive, but I'm a firm believer, if it is a great car, the great cars are always, there's never going to be cheap. We got to realize that if you want a great anything, it's never going to be cheap. It's never going to be the cheapest out there.
Yeah.
So I would rather, we're definitely advocates of buy the best, and I'd rather have the best car for sale. Yes, it'll be a bit more expensive, but also when you come to sell it, it'll also always be, if it's the best one, it'll always be the most valuable one. In whatever, whether it's a Fiat 500 or a Ferrari 250 GTO, whichever, you know, the best one of each will always be the most valuable and the easiest to sell. If you have to sell, if you have the best one, it's just a matter of drop the price a little bit and there's always someone there.
Yeah.
So we are very, very keen and very careful in trying to select the right cars that we want to offer. And you know, in our world, we have sort of a nice, very sort of tight-knit sort of world. Our clients, our best clients, they sort of tend to, we have this like a, I don't want to say a family, but our best clients deal with us a lot.
Yeah.
So also for us, if you're one of our best clients and I sell you a car, I'm always happy to take it back because I know it's a good car.
Yeah.
You know, and 90% of our business is repeat business.
Nice.
We sell very few cars to one person once and then never again. We always say in the office, if someone comes here and buys a car and never buys again a car from us again, it's almost like we've failed. We've dropped the ball somewhere. The experience here should be good enough that you come back. And because we want you to come back and we want to have the cars back as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Does it get to the point where, I imagine in the sort of classic racing circles, if you want to do the events, for example, if you've got the best 512M, for example, that car is significantly easier to sell than, like, I don't know how many of those particular cars there are, but like the worst, for example, or even like middle of the pack. Is there a significant drop off, basically?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a car, and especially with competition cars, if they have race history, they've had their bumps and they've had their bangs. So, you know, a car that, I mean, taking an extreme example, a car that's been written off and then resurrected from its ashes is probably like worth 10% or 20% of the very best one in the in the world. And you know, you mentioned events. If you have a great car, it's also a ticket to entry to all the events. If you have the Le Mans winning class, you know, the Le Mans winning 550 ProDrive, you are always welcome and invited everywhere. You know, for the 100th year anniversary, that's the car they had parading in front of the 100th year of Le Mans. That's one of the cars they had parading in front of everyone. Goodwood always invites it. Pebble Beach will like to have the Le Mans winner for, you know, I'm taking like an extreme example, but it's also a ticket to entry to a lot of events, and I think that it's nice. If you love cars, it's nice to be invited and share these things, right?
Yeah, totally. And I'm always amazed when I go to, have been to like Le Mans Classic and stuff like that, and you'll walk past some garages and you'll be like, oh, hang on a minute, this is one person's set of cars for this event, and it might be six cars that they can use in six different
six different events.
And so there's some big, you know, there's some big budgets going around here, and most people seem to turn up by jet and all that sort of stuff. So you go, okay, well, these cars are expensive, but they're not expensive relative to yachts and planes and all that sort of stuff. So the budgets are there.
Yes.
It's just, is the value good? And also, is it, like you say, is it going to be my ticket to, and I only want the one that will.
And you know, there is value in that as well, right? I mean, It's not a money can't buy experience, but to be, you know, invited to parade, to be the person leading the parade. I was super lucky. We sold the 250 LM from 1964, 65 250 LM, and I was super lucky that that I got to drive it, and we were invited to lead out the Ferrari race at Goodwood this year. So it was us and two other GTOs, and if you have the car, you get invited, but it's sort of a, if you don't have the car, it's not like I can buy a ticket to do that.
Yeah.
It's sort of a money can't buy experience. Unless you have the car, there is no access to it. So there is something quite nice about these old cars that they give you also access to a certain event, certain lifestyle, and you meet some great people. You know, you're in the mixing in the right circles. Yeah. If you're lucky enough to own one. So there's more to it than just the car.
What on those, because we're looking, okay, we've just been talking about this, let's say the sort of top of the price end of that spectrum, but there are also cars that will get you into stuff that are, let's say, trying almost like the bottom, but they are interesting.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Absolutely.
Well, can you give me an example of some things that are sort of like lesser known but would get you invited on Millimiglia?
You know, Millimiglia. So every event in the classic car world, every event has its own rules for eligibility of cars and entry. So Millimiglia, for example, it is a car, you have to have a model or a car that has done the Millimiglia. That model has to have done the Millimiglia in period, right? So if that car did not do it, there is no chance you can get in. But if you want to enter the Millimiglia, for example, not everyone, but Mercedes-Benz brings 25 Gullwings. So if you have a Gullwing, which is a very valuable car, and you want to enter, chances are you're not going to get in.
Yeah.
However, if you have a Fiat Topolino, like a little Fiat Topolino, you will almost guaranteed an entry because no one actually really enters a Topolino. It's a long way, to be fair, it's a long way to go in a tiny, tiny little car. But there's an example of a little tiny car that will almost guarantee that you'll get an entry into an event like the Millimiglia. So I think it's really sweet. You know, we have this habit of looking at the big ticket items and so on. But there are some really, really sweet little cars that will give you access to some great events as well.
Yeah, and I think it must be difficult if you're getting into that world and you're like I know if I was like, oh, you can go to Le Mans Classic and drive the car you want to drive, For me, right now, that might be like a 996 RSR or a 997 RSR or something like that, because they just have a particular thing in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But you also might go, okay, Porsche, there's the chance of there being some Porsches there already,
yeah,
very high.
Yeah.
So you probably shouldn't go for that unless you've got the one.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So you think, okay, what else did a 996 race against? I mean, I've got a really good friend and he races, he's got a TVR, which is super cool, right? Like,
how cool
is it to go to? I have to say, I'm a big fan of finding the cars that are a bit different from everyone else.
Totally.
You know, I have a client that bought an Alpha 33 Daytona, which is like, you could buy a 906 Porsche in that category. You could buy, but he's like, no, you know what? I'm gonna have a 33 Daytona because it's different, because no one else. And he went on this rally and he was like the star of the show. There were more valuable cars. It was like super tick, but in his Alpha, because no one ever sees one. So I think that's there's something to be said about thinking outside the box.
Totally. Yeah, and thinking of those grids at like Le Mans Classic, actually, like I know some people that run some TVRs. I think they're the only people that run TVRs.
Yeah, I think they're probably the same people.
And then there was someone who was running a Morgan.
Yeah, how cool
is
that?
A blue Morgan, GT3 type thing. And you're like, you see all these things, you're like, what is this? Like sitting next to this crazy Ferrari and you're like, it doesn't even look that serious. But at the time, they competed. Like they managed to get an entry together.
The Toyota Supra, there's a guy. There are some really cool, different cars. And sometimes we're a little bit guilty of sort of following the pack and think, but whether it's in road cars, I think, or in race cars,
totally.
In the road cars, sometimes I'm going to criticize all of us.
Yeah.
All of us car lovers. We tend to sort of follow on as like, everyone has whatever it is. No offense, a 911.
100%. I'm following the pack.
You're following the pack. I mean, there's good reason, right? It's practical. It's good. It's reliable. It's well built. It's not like, stupidly expensive compared to some other cars. So there is good reason, but sometimes it's quite fun to think outside the box.
It is.
And it's a challenge as well.
It is a challenge.
It's not easy.
So on road cars, last time I saw you, you had a Giulia.
Do you still have that? I still have that. So good memory. Good memory. I still have that because for two reasons. One,
it's
left field. I bought a brand new. It was one of the first, 500 cars, which is manual. And then they didn't make the manual anymore.
A manual?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know they were
manual. Yeah, there's only 500 manual cars. So I bought a brand new. It's manual. And after about 2 years ownership, I thought, maybe I'll sell it. And I looked at the depreciation. It was just so much. I thought, I'm just going to buy it. So to keep on to that theme, so it was time for a new car for me. And I looked at the BMW M3. I looked at the Mercedes, I looked at an Audi, RS4, RS6. Yeah. So I now thought, no, I still want to be different. So I have a Stelvio Quadrifoglio.
Okay.
In it's called Montreal Green, sort of a three-layer green.
Nice.
I do have a soft spot recently for like non-black or non-gray cars. This is, at the moment, is my thing, is I don't want a black or a gray car. You drive down the M40 or whatever, the M25, and you look, you try, when you're driving home tonight, you look out and you think, oh my God, everyone has like a gray, black, white, if they're really, it used to be, all cars used to be red. They're not even red cars anymore. Everything's just gray and black. And why can't we have a yellow car?
And you look at some...
What's wrong with yellow? No one has yellow cars.
And like,
I want a yellow car, by the way. Midlife crisis, this is what it is.
Yeah. I think, colors make people happy, 100%. And I think a lot of people, I'm trying to be more colorful in terms of car ownership. So we bought another little Peugeot recently and it's red.
Good.
And we had quite a bright blue one before, but I was like, we need a different color other than blue. I've had loads of blues. And every time I see a color that's in a nice, bright, whatever, it puts a smile on my face when I see it. And you do think, it's the amount of like just gray, and then it gets dirty and it's all just like gray, blacky, isn't it?
You work on the way. On the way home, you'll see they're all the same grayish. They were all maybe different colors, but they're all, and then, oh, but this one's like the Audi blue and the other one's the Mercedes, but they're all just different versions of dark blue.
So in terms of market and things, you guys do a lot of competition cars, you do a lot of rally cars.
Do a lot of rally cars. And then, so it's probably even now, it's probably an even split between, so a little bit less than the Riley car front, but between, let's say, competition road cars is probably about 50-50.
How are you finding those sort of, I'm going to say, three markets?
Yeah.
Sort of split those rally.
Yeah.
Ferrari so, stuff and then road.
Road. So we're talking about competition cars. We'll stick to the competition cars. Now people want cars that either give them access to an event, we were talked about before, because I want a car, you know, for example, there's got a client, we're looking for a car that's eligible for Monaco. It's going to be Monaco Historic Grand Prix.
Right.
And he is looking for, you know, he'd like a 50s car to do Monaco, or cars with great history that are for collections.
Okay.
So those are really the, in our world of the competition cars, we've got the two separate, the guy that wants the collection. So he wants to line up, you know, he wants the Ferrari competition GT car. So we've got a client, he's got a 360, a 430. He's got the 458 now. We're going to look for a 488. And he'd like to have, so, and that's not for racing. That's a collection.
Oh,
and then there's a guy that wants to go to Le Mans Classic or Monaco, but in something which has some history, some gravitas, some quality. So those are our two main sort of client bases on the competition car.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Front. The rally cars, what we did was, rally cars were always sort of quite grassroots, but what we've done is we have went to along the same lines of the competition cars. We've gone to look for what are the best rally cars. So that comes down to brand and results and drivers. So, you know, we've tried to unearth as many of the McRae-driven Subarus.
Yep. How many are there?
Yeah, not that many because he kept on crashing. I mean, the amount of shells that he went through. And so we try and get sort of cars that are, you know, we all know Colin McRae, right? It's sort of quite an iconic figures. And so what we've done is we've gone out and tried to find them, because when they finished rallying with the works, often they'd got sold to teams and they became tools.
Yeah.
So now we've tried to gone out and try and find, right, where's the Monte Carlo rally winning, even if it's a, you know, Focus. Whereas the cars that have important history, bring them out, restore them, and they go into sort of more of collections. They are no longer tools. Because at the end of the day, Monte Carlo Rally is probably one of the most prestigious rallies. So to have a Monte Carlo Rally winner, it's a pretty cool thing, you know? Or we believe so anyway. And those don't get really used for events very much. We do organize once or twice a year. We go to Wales and rent a Sweet Lamb. But in general, they're more sort of collector pieces and get driven quite gently because of the history. And, you know, with a rally car, it's quite difficult because in rallying, there's a lot of trees around.
Mm.
If you know, in competition, in circuit racing, if you have a moment, you might hopefully end up in the gravel. In rallying, you wrap around a tree and that's the car written off. That car now, they get resurrected and so on. But for what we do, for our clients, if a car has been, you know, reshelled for us, it's just, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not to collector grade.
Yeah.
That's why it's quite difficult to find them. So that's what we've been doing with the rally cars. We're struggling to find the missing ones now.
And within those markets, so the competition cars and the rallies, like, are there certain cars, brands that over the last 2 years, 3 years are starting to sort of separate themselves from the others? Are they all going up? Are they all going down? Is there some distance coming along?
So there's always, Ferrari's always Ferrari. Right, in the competition world and in the road car world, Ferrari's always, for some reason, sort of ahead. But we're seeing some new brands coming. like Aston Martin with the GT1 cars, the DBR9s, for example, really starting to gain some traction. And it's probably also due to the age. They're coming into that age where they become not just an old race car. It's now a collectible collectible car. So we've seen some evolution there.
What's the DBR9? What's the range on a DBR9 now?
So you'll go for there's 10 works cars. For a works car, you'll go anywhere between 2.5 and 4.5 or 5 million pounds.
Oh, wow.
For the privateer cars, or a privately run car, it'll be somewhere, I don't know if you could find one for £1 million, but sort of under 2.5.
Yeah.
Not much, sort of say 1.5 to 2.5 million pounds.
So, interesting.
Yeah.
I'm looking back at when I saw certain cars and you're like,
they've moved. Amazing. They have definitely moved, right? Right.
Everyone I spoke to at the time, like a few people were like, one of these in not that long.
Exactly right. And that's been that, speaking about the DBR9s, that's really been accelerated by Le Mans Classic and ERL. Yeah. So now all of a sudden, it was an old car, out of date. No one knows what to do with it. Then after a while, it gets better with age, like a fine wine. And people start to pay attention.
And they
sound phenomenal, like phenomenal. And when they start to gain attention, all of a sudden, there is a real event and a series you can go. And so that just boosted the value even more, because now I'm going to have a car that sounds good, looks good, good brand. Gets me the invite. Is also well-driven, is also very competitive. So that's just turbo boosted the values of those cars. So in the world of rally cars, I mean, it's Group B. So and it still remains, Lancia and Audi in the Group B era were always like the halo cars. And I think recently, the blue Subarus, and again, also an age thing, right? The guys that were playing Colin McRae rally are now 100%. Can sort of think, I remember seeing him rally. Now I can own his car. That's pretty cool, right? If you saw it, I always find it quite special when, whether it's a Formula One car, whether it's a rally car, when you like see that car and then you remember seeing that race. I think it's, then to think it's here, when I was like 10, I never thought wow, you see it on TV. But then when you actually, I always find that quite a special moment. I had a, we delivered a car that we sold and it was a road going Lancia Stratos to a really super nice guy. He's got loads of Porsches, but I said to him, I said, so you've got 10 Porsches, like the whole range, everything from 356 to the latest GT3 RS. And he's like, you know what, Max? Because when I was a kid, he's Italian, growing up in Italy, because when I was a kid, I used to watch the Stratoses do the rallies, and I never thought I would be able to own one. Never, ever, ever thought. And now I have it, and it's here, and it's in my house. It's in my house. It's that special. Yeah. I said to him, that actually makes it really special. Like, that's cool. Because he thought he would never, ever be able to own one. Isn't that great?
Yeah. And there is something, as you say, about seeing something competing on TV or playing with it on a console or whatever, and then being able to buy it, drive it, etc.
Yeah. And that happens in the road car world. So coming down the last sort of section of the road car world, you see that very much. And I know we state in the obvious, but the cars from the 2000s now, we've all seen that they're more and more desirable. But at the end of the day, the people that saw them, the 1990s that had the poster on their wall and so on, now some people have been successful in life. They've got some extra money and they can go and buy a 930 turbo, or they can buy a Testarossa, or they can buy an F40, depending on the budgets, or a 1989 911 speedster. That definitely makes a difference. And then from there, now you're in the car game, or you're in the old car game, and not for everyone, but some people think, okay, well, hang a second, I've got a 89 speedster. Why was it called speedster? Because it was a 356 speedster. So maybe a 356 speedster to put next to my 1989 speedster. Oh, and then there was another, and then that's how collections start, and that's how you learn about cars, and it's great. It's I've got 99, and now what was against it was a Testarossa, or it can evolve in any, it can take lots of different shapes in different ways.
Yeah, 100%. You've got to do that gateway drug, which was like I always wanted to own a whatever.
Yeah.
yep. Porsche, Ferrari, blah, Alpha, anything.
Yeah.
And then you get that, and then you start going sideways.
Yeah, exactly.
And spirals and ups and downs.
You try and figure out, how do I buy the next one? Where is it going to come from? You know, that's half the fun.
Yeah, 100%. And then with that stuff, over time, we've got these people, you know, everyone's, the young people, look at poster on the wall, getting older, can afford it. But also cars are starting to get made in much bigger numbers. But then is the market almost expanding at the same rate so that therefore 1,000 cars feel like a lot these days? I don't know.
There is definitely an expansion in the market. Like, I think in the world of modern cars, 1,000 cars is sort of almost quite limited. It's not super limited. There's obviously all the one of one, and there's obviously the one of 10. And...
because no one wanted it.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, people, we often forget, and that's why it's quite difficult to see, you know, what's the next, everyone always asks me, what's the next great big thing? It's difficult. I mean, McLaren F1, you know, that last car that they couldn't sell sat in the parking lot showroom for years. I mean, 4 or 5 years it sat there and they couldn't sell them. You know, Pagani Zondas.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking to Horacio's salesman, and he was saying to me, like, when they first launched it, they would go on tour, brochures in a briefcase, and if they sold a Zonda, they come back and celebrate almost like, God, we sold one more. Thank God. So sometimes it's the ones that, you know, that nobody wanted, now people want. And sometimes the ones that nobody want, still nobody wants.
Still nobody want. Because you could, it's very, as you say, it's very difficult. It's very impossible almost to predict the future without doing the standard ticking all the boxes type scenario. Like, it's a really rare Ferrari, blah, 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 blah. At which point it's really expensive now anyway, because it's kind of, they're starting to get priced in from year one. If you went, what's not sold very much, I feel like that's a really dangerous game.
I mean, yeah, if you've got to have the balls to go in and you know, if that's what you're looking for, you got to go get the thing that nobody wants. I mean, coming back on colors, you know, dealing with the old cars, we definitely, when it comes to the road cars, definitely love, you know, if you can find a purple Dino for Ferrari Dino, purple's quite a, you know, the Viola's quite a rare car. Pistachio, there's a like a sort of a pistachio green car.
Yeah.
It's quite rare. There's only 15 or 20. At the time, I'm sure that when the guy ordered the pistachio green Dino, he probably went home and his wife was probably thinking, what is that?
Yeah.
And the person in the dealership was like, why? And then that's why they only had 15. Today, if you could find a car that was delivered originally in that color, super desirable.
Yeah.
Like, super, super desirable. But who would have known? And I bet you, when he had a pistachio green Dino to sell as a secondhand car, when he was 3 years old, I tell you what, I bet you they painted it red to be able to sell it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You got done like an extra 10, 20% on the sale. In terms of, did you do the N24?
I did the Nürburgring 24. I think I did it. I mean, as an amateur, like very much as an amateur, literally with mates. So much fun. I think I did it four times.
What in?
Three times in a what we used to call the mobile chicane. It was a Renault Clio.
Nice.
Renault Clio Cup.
Yeah.
And you know what? Those are actually some of my best memories. And then one time in a Cayman GT4. The last time
which was the most fun of those two?
At the risk of sounding boring and old, but probably in the Clio, because literally we went like four mates with the most amateur team out there, sleeping in the back of the truck and with zero expectations. So I think that was like, you know, just finishing in a Renault Clio. I mean, if I think back now, I think must have been mad. But just getting to the end. I remember one year that we did it. It hailed.
Oh, nice!
It hailed. It was quite because, and there's a quite famous sort of at the bottom of the foxhole. All the GT3 cars, they were all on slicks, and it just hailed, and they couldn't they like literally couldn't make it up the hill because like it was so cold. It's like tires. We had started with wet tires, and it was a front wheel drive car, and they were all stuck in. We were sort of, I mean, they red flagged the race, but we made it back. No problem. Just to give you an idea, but some great memories, great memories.
Finishing that, I had a sort of similar sort of experience in a C1. Finishing that first year, did you come back, when you came back to you again, you were like, oh, well, we finished X. Now we just want to finish like higher up this time around. Did you have that perception?
Yeah.
And how did it pan out?
Yeah, unfortunately. So the first year we finished in I don't know what sort of the old shape Clio.
Yeah.
And then we thought, oh, all right, we finished. And we're like, you know, I don't know, probably like second to last, but we were, whatever, it was fifth in class.
Yeah.
It was all the matter of rows of the class. I mean, yeah, we were so far back. So the next year, we're like, right, we need the next Clio. So this is like before the turbo version, the last normally last race. So we even like spent money and upgraded the car to get the newer model. That didn't finish so well, because I don't think we finished. And then the last year, I had a little moment in qualifying where I just clipped the barrier, but it was fine. Made it back, did the race, and then we were like leading our class of two Clios. It's probably more than that. we're leading our class, and then the front suspension mount broke, and that was super exciting because the wheel was like sort of bending in. It came in. I was strapped in the car. They were like welding.
Oh, nice.
Like me in the car, like to help and safety. Literally, they were like welding the suspension arm back on, because we'd like only have to do like two more laps to be able to finish. So that was really good. And we like came second in our class. But I said, it was like literally like, I don't know, five people in the class. But what a sense of achievement.
Yeah.
You know, you're tired. I like literally had tears in my eyes crossing the line, because we like made it, and we were on the podium of the low lives. And you know, with your mates, it was very much a sort of friends thing, like, you know, four mates going off to Germany. Great, great fun.
Have a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, great fun. No pressure, great fun.
Have you been out in the 550?
Been out in the 550, not this year actually, but did Le Mans Classic, let's say warm up race or opening race for the Le Mans 24 hours.
Is that a race now?
Yes, yeah. Le Mans Classic is for the ERLs is definitely a race. And that was great. For me, you know, again, part of the experience to be at Le Mans in a 550 Pro Drive,
in a Ferrari,
in a race, you know, and we had a great race dicing with a DBR9. One of my best memories. I got to say, that was a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal day.
Like that was
I sort of, you know, died and gone to heaven that day. That was it. I sort of thought, that's it. I'm done. I don't think I can top this. I'm definitely, definitely done. I'm very lucky.
So something I saw, I was having a little flick back through your Instagram and stuff for some topics to cover. Have you had a change in opinion on 2.7 RSs?
Oh, massive. Massive. I always like thought, everyone, damn 2.7 RSs. Everyone wants a 2.7 RS. And you drive them sort of, you know, whatever it is, 10 minutes, whatever, from here to there, test drive. And I always thought they were a bit bland. Like,
old 911.
Just an old 911. What's the big deal? And then we bought a right-hand drive car, which I kept for 9 months or something, or about a year. And I drove it. And I really drove it. Drove it down to Goodwood. I drove it down to track days. I drove it everywhere. And the 2.7 RS, the more you drive it, it just, you. I think I'm embarrassed to say, I didn't see the light. It's amazing. It's so capable. It's not blisteringly quick, but from point A to point B, you know, if I need to go from here to Goodwood, I tell you what, there's very few cars that will be more effective on an English country road. It will keep up with an F40. And it was, oh, F40s. No, because it's just so easy, compliant. It's comfortable. It brakes. It's got great sort of power delivery. And I can put my kids in the back if I want to, or some of them anyway. I can have bags. It sits just right. I am completely a transformed man when it comes to 2.7 RSs. To the point where I thought, you know what? I did all my research and I thought, you know what? Seems like quite a lot of money to have to drive every day. I'm going to buy a 2.4S. And I know everyone says they're so similar, but it's not the same. I can, you know, because everyone, because I thought to myself, it was just it's instead of a 2.4 liter engine, it's 2.7 liter. What's the big? There is something about the 2.7 RS, and it just ticked so many boxes for me. I am a completely transformed man. I take it all back.
Interesting that you can't, like, as you say, on paper, like, there's not a lot difference between.
There's probably
little bits here and there.
There's little bits there and there. And being Italian, I'm probably a little bit, you know, sort of just the look of the RS as well. When you go up to it, you know, and the one I had was yellow, you know, like bright colors on the cars, you know, houndstooth interior. I had a 2.4S, which was blue. You know, I gave you my feelings about blue earlier on cars, and with a black interior. And probably as a package, maybe if the 2.4S was a bit more exciting, even just in spec, I would have been a bit more excited about it. But after after having a sort of a signal yellow 2.7 RS, I am so transformed. I'm actually embarrassed that I didn't see the light earlier. Especially me. It's my thing, cars.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really, really good car. It's a great. So to me, I put cars as a point A to point B car. That's a 2.7 RS. Like, you want to go somewhere, you want to take your wife out to dinner, you want to go to Goodwood, you want to go away for a weekend, great car. An F40, good point A to point A car. In other words, get up early in the morning, go for a squirt for half an hour, you come back, you park it, you've had your fix, and you're done.
Yeah.
You don't want to be spending 4 days in an F40 driving. I mean, of course you do, but it's just a bit more tiring. Whereas the 2.7 RS is just as a, wow, all around.
Getting off
that's
you
the
go.
One.
Yeah. And what's, how many, are there, there can't be many right-hand drive?
Right-hand drive, I should know this off the top of my head, and I don't, but there is very
roughly.
Few. There's like probably, how was it, 100 and something worldwide.
How many left-hand drive?
1,200.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like 10%. They call it 10%
okay.
of the pressure.
And
I think it's
a right-hand drive 2.7 RS. 500?
Yeah. Spot on.
You're good.
So the big question is. Yeah. I mean, obviously, depends on color, depends on spec, depends on restoration.
Condition,
by the way. They were super valuable. They've come back. A little bit for us, so they went like skyrocketed up in price, and now they've come back. They were like 800, 900, maybe 500 wouldn't be a great one. You really want to be spending sort of £600,000. And then, of course, then the question is, you know, would you have a 2.7 RS or would you have a Ferrari Daytona?
Yeah. Which would you have?
I'd probably have both.
One looks significantly more special.
Yeah, it's more of an event.
What skew you, but
yeah,
and a 2.7 RS looks like an old 911. There's a lot of cars that look like that.
Yeah. But it's sort of easy to use. It's. I hate to say it's like I buy it because I'm practical, showing my age. But there is a. I am a big fan of driving, and I think that one of the things that all of us, I say all of us, I'm exaggerating. A lot of us that love cars, we don't do enough is drive.
Agreed.
You know, and we are. I criticize all of us because we don't drive our cars enough. And to me, if I can, you know, I'm on a quest at the moment to find the coolest, the best 4-seat car. So 911 2+2. I found the best 2+2 to me.
Yeah.
What is the coolest, best 4-seat car of any? Like, if you need a real 4-seat car, what would you have? And it's not easy. It's fine. The reason why I want to try and find it is because I have a small army of children.
Yeah.
So I find that if I have a car that's actually got 4 or 5, I will use it 100% more, literally double. Because all of a sudden on Sunday morning, I got to take my son to football, my daughter to horse riding.
Yeah.
And if I only got 2 seats, I can't. All of a sudden I got to leave in the garage. I can't take it. So I'm always on the quest to find, because I want to use them. I want to, don't get me wrong, I also want a 2-seater that I can take for a blast. But I think that's because we don't use our cars, and we need to be braver and just use them.
At the moment, in like, I know, having a 2-year-old at the moment, or nearly two, I've just basically not driven for the last like 2 years, pretty much. All the sports cars have not been used. And then now I have the GTS, and it's got, I can put him in the back seat, and he doesn't go into that much, but I know I can.
Yeah.
And actually that car, I use it all the time. And I think I'm sort of doing a little, like a sort of softening of going, I've had some crazy cars. Let's come back to, I want a car that if I'm going to do something, I will just get in and use. That's kind of the mindset I'm in at the moment. Of like, have one, okay, you end up with more than one, but one that, like you say, you're like, I can use this for everything. And then if there's something else down the line pops up, there was a very cool Alphaholics, like,
yeah.
How do you feel about
cool
those?
That?
The 4-seater.
The Giulia Super. Very cool. I was on the Modena Centauri rally in Italy with Max Banks from Alphaholics. And so I was like, you planning to build any more of those? I mean, I thought that was very, see, stuff like that. I do like that. I thought that was a very cool, cool build. You know,
that's really cool. That's the sort of thing you go like, okay. It's not quite the history side of tell me more, but it's like, okay, no, there's quite a lot more in this to this car than like just what it looks like.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. No, that's cool. Yeah, but basically a message to everyone out there, you need to drive our cars. And you know what? The more you drive them, the better they get. The more you get to know them. And the more people see them, more people enjoy them, more people love them. Got to share these cars with everyone.
The more memories you have.
More memories you have. I have a friend, colleague, actually. I won't name him so that I don't shame him on your podcast, but he had a 355. He bought a 355 a couple of years ago, and it's like literally his pride and joy, which is really sweet. Really, really so cool that he, you know, put the money together and managed to get a 355. But literally, he would look at the weather, and if it was like rain in the next like week, like, yeah. Where's your car? Oh no, it might rain. I'm not going to take it out. And I said to him, like, when you have kids one day and your son goes to you, so you had a Ferrari, Dad. Oh, cool. You had 355. He said, what was it like? What are you going to say? Well, I don't know. I never drove it. It might have gotten dirty.
200 miles.
Or do you want to say, it was amazing. I drove it to Monaco and back, and I went over the Bernina Pass, and then I had all these great memories, and I took it to whatever, the pub and the track day. That's what we want to hear, right?
100%. Are you going to any of the ice events?
So I think I'll go to St. Moritz. I actually haven't been, so it's on the list of events to do. But I'd definitely like to go to St. Moritz. It's cool. I've not been, and let's go.
I'm trying to go. I want to go to St. Moritz this year.
Organized. Let's go.
Yeah,
go and check it out.
Well, I think that's been a pretty good catch up. I normally finish with five questions. We've done them before a few times, so I might do a little edited version.
I was gonna say my answers will be completely different. Don't worry.
Well,
each day you ask me.
If you could only drive one car, sports car, for the rest of your life, what would it be?
What's that perfect four-seater? Do you know what I was looking at the other day? Oh, and now I'm gonna embarrass myself because I don't know the name of all the modern supercars. What's that? Koenigsegg 2+2 called?
Oh.
You know,
Gemera?
What I mean?
Gemera?
Is it Gemera?
Yeah, like, this is pretty cool.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not going to spend that kind of money.
Yeah.
But I thought to myself, that would be quite... I might have found my... too bad I don't have however many millions I need to buy a brand new car. But maybe I found my perfect perfect four-seater. So if I could only drive one sports car, what would it be? I mean, you know, now recently we just did our Christmas video and I had the pleasure and luck of driving the 512M, and I know it's quite obscure and I don't know if that counts as a sports car, but I got out the car, no word of a lie. You can ask the boys in the office, and I said, right boys, we're gonna sell everything because you only need one car and this is it. It was phenomenal. Like, what a car. Like, the power, the noise, the gear shift, the handling. Obviously I like the older cars, the history. I got out of the car, I was like, right, we're selling everything, this is it. Sell a farm, sell everything, we're gonna buy this car. That's all you need in your life.
Can you drive it on the road?
Well, that's the best bit. So can you drive on the road? I mean, it's definitely not practical on the road, but in period, one of the cars did the Tour Auto,
really?
So there was one that was road registered. So how cool is that? And I've got a friend of mine who did the Tour Auto in a 512 last year as well. So he got his road registered. So get a road registered. And I mean, how cool. That's it. So that's at this time around, I don't know what my answer was last time, 512M, like leagues ahead, like phenomenal.
That, seeing one of those on the road.
Can you imagine?
Just like, I don't know, at the pub or something, or just drives past you in London, just like. What?
What? 5 liter V12. Can't see anything out of the back. I mean, it just...
Mad prototype shape.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, very cool. Most undervalued car at the moment?
Most undervalued car at the moment. I'll tell you what, a Ferrari... Can I go for an expensive one? A valuable one. Ferrari 599 Aperta.
Oh.
How's that?
How much are they?
They're sort of just over £1 million. And I know you're going to say, oh, that's not so much money. However,
599 Aperta. How many? 500 cars?
80.
80. Okay.
80 cars worldwide. Ferrari, V12, front engine.
SA Aperta or something? Yeah.
Open top. Yeah. Only 80. I mean, Ferrari now limited production is like 600. There's only 80 of them in the world. And I think that that's a pretty rare, especially by modern standards, it's super rare.
It is.
And it's front engined and it's V12. And it's got a Targa convertible. So to me, I think that's in the future. We'll look back and think, God, do you remember they were really cheap?
Yeah.
I
remember when they came out. They were really cool.
But still now, they're not very loved.
What's the...
It's a 599 GTO.
Yes.
Limited production with no roof.
Did they do a normal one? What was the Super America?
That was in the 575.
Is that a 575? So did they do a later one?
The 575 Super America was the one with like the top that... The roof sort of twit. How can you explain it? it doesn't come off, but it rotates.
Okay.
It was a glass panel that would rotate back and rest on the back bump.
Did you an F12?
F12. They
Super
did
America or something?
They did an F12.
Like five cars or something?
Yeah. Okay, very good. Yeah. They did like, I think it was called like an F60.
Yes.
And it was for the 60th anniversary of Ferrari being sold in America. But those are like $3-5 million.
Yeah.
You know, 599 a person. Mark my words.
Along with.
Go get one.
Those 50th, was it 50th? 60th anniversary cars that they made.
I mean this. And the 70th, like I feel like
there's really awful spec F12.
There's always some kind of anniversary that was 70th, 50th, 60th. I don't know what, you know, blue anniversary, God knows what.
Yeah. Okay. Most interesting car to you at the moment?
Most interesting car to me at the moment is right now is a Formula One car. So I was just came back from Dubai, where I drove my first Formula One car ever.
Ooh.
I drove the Minardi, 1984. Minardi with a DFV, and it at the moment that's the most interesting, just because it's a whole new world. It's so fast, you're so connected to the car. It's like it's an unbelievable experience. And everyone says, "Oh, Formula." It's true. It is like it was what, and it's interesting to me because there's so much more to learn.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to going on that trip. And I wanna. My objective is to go and drive it in Monaco in the historic Grand Prix. So I wanna do some testing and just. I'm never going to win, but I just want to be safe and I want to be in the pack. And I think at the moment, a Formula One car is what an experience. You know, if you have the opportunity, you can, what an experience. So right now, that's the most interesting car to me because it's a new learning thing. You know, it's a completely new world. I've never, ever sat in one until.
And is that like an H pattern?
That's an H pattern, yeah.
And what sort of power, weight?
Like 600 horsepower and about 500 kilos, 150 kilos. Big slick tires, got to get the aero working. I don't say it's a black art. Lots of people can do it and lots of do it better than me, but it is a great learning experience.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. What a thing. And to say I've driven a Formula One car, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Formula One car. Amazing.
That's like the heroine or whatever of the car world. It's got to be. Like,
a Formula One car. You know, and depending on the eras, like some people love the 70s, 80s, 90s. I want to drive early 2000s Ferrari Formula One car. That's like just one of those things. That's I think it would be an amazing experience. That V10, you know, screaming, howling at, was it 18,000 RPM?
Yeah.
It'll be done one day.
I think when I first came to see you, you had a 90s Schumacher.
1997, yeah, that's
97.
Right. 97? Yeah. First, yeah, that's right.
Car
that's right.
That was that list.
That's right, good memory.
Pretty, like.
That was a V12. Like super cool. That's on the list of
that shape.
Yes,
for me it's like
the sort of the Coke bottle shape. It's like, so beautiful.
So
it's
beautiful.
Perfect. It's simple, red. It was in winglets and wings everywhere. That is amazing. And then you know, couple it with the engine that's revving and the noise and
yeah,
love it.
Insane. Right. And final question. Sorry, not final question. Nearly final question. Five car garage, unlimited value. Got to fit in your life.
You know, right now, I'd have a Ferrari Formula One car.
Yeah.
Just because, like, amazing. Yep. Amazing. Would have I'd have to have a pre-war car. I think I've said it before, you know, Alfa Romeo 8C, just because it's such a visceral drive, because it's sort of, that's sort of a Formula One car for the road of the 1930s. Yep. So 8C, Ferrari Formula One car. I have to have a rally car in there, you know, my 037.
Yeah.
I just love the driving experience. And then I need two road cars, probably a short wheelbase. Mm-hmm. Because it's not so sporty. I'd say GTO, but short wheelbase said like, I want a car that I can, use.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, I'd like a supercar. I'd like a hypercar. Would I have a Porsche GT1 or a CLK GTR. I know the go-to is the McLaren F1, right? But I was trying to think outside the box.
There's a CLK GTR here.
Yes, there is a CLK GTR here. It's looking pretty, isn't it?
We were looking at. They're just insane-looking things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Insane, isn't it?
They're just insane.
Yeah.
There's not that 20 something?
Yeah, 25.
25?
Yeah. So maybe I have a CLK GTR just because... Everyone else will turn up with their McLaren F1s, but I'm going to turn up in my CLK GTR.
That's true. What's the engine in the
Mercedes V12?
See, that does pip it over the Porsche. It's exciting.
That's the only problem with the Porsche, is that it's not a problem at all, don't get me wrong. It's a six, you know, flat six twin turbo, which don't get me wrong, it's amazing and it's great. However, something about a V12.
There is something about a V12. Although I did try and maneuver a CLK GTR around someone's
impossible
garage, and it was actually impossible to get in.
Yeah, impossible to move, impossible to get in, impossible to drive, impossible. But we can talk about it.
But yeah, pretty cool. Right, final question. This is I was thinking about this the other day. What's your car of the year? This could be something you've driven, something that's come out, something that's old. Just like you're like, that car this year, yeah.
You know, I'm all about driving, and at the risk of repeating myself, but I'm gonna have to go back to that 512. I guess it's so recent. My wound hasn't healed yet of the 512, and that was my revelation of the year and car of the year, because I had never ever imagined how exciting and fun it is. And at the end of the day, it's a Ferrari. It's a 12-cylinder, 5-liter, naturally aspirated Ferrari. I mean, what else does one want from life?
And it's a prototype.
That you could potentially drive on the road.
You could potentially drive on the road.
And
you
I don't got know how to, good it'll be on the school run. However,
you got to give it some beans on like an airfield and stuff, which is
almost even
that's possibly
more
better.
Is it? I was going to say, even better than being on the circuit where you've got to like be precise, but just give it some beans and just hoot around. Is that the word?
I mean, and I guess
how many people filming, in the world into that?
It's very, you know, serious business, but also
very
the goal
serious
is to
fun.
put a smile on your face
and everyone watching the film. So go watch the Christmas video, guys, yeah, and go, see what you think.
Go watch it. Right. Well, thanks very much for coming back on the podcast.
Always good to chat to you. Always good.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.